Hey everybody, it's the time.
It's the time.
Time is now.
Time of your life.
What episode is this? 39.
Am I right? Or
yeah.
Is it 40?
It's either 38 or 39, so I'm going to go with
39.
39. Yeah. Welcome to episode 39.
Of the Big Planet Comics podcast.
We're here.
Yep. We're always here.
Occasionally here.
We sit here for a week and then wait until it's time to do another podcast. All right, so my name is Kevin.
I'm Nick.
I'm Jared.
We're the people that do the podcast that you're listening to.
We're these guys.
We're the gang's all here. All right, so if you want to subscribe to this podcast, you can do it on Internet Tunes.
I thought they had to send like a self-addressed stamped envelope to a P.O. box.
Is that what the I stands for?
I assume it stands for Internet, right?
Well, I don't know. Is
like
it Internet
the iMac
Pod?
Stands for Internet Mac.
Internet. I know E stands for electronic.
Internet Pod or Internet Pad?
Yeah, get on your Internet Pad. I don't know. I don't know what else it would stand for.
Yeah. Right.
Steve and Jobs don't either. Neither of those start with an I. Apple doesn't start with an I.
iApple.
Internet Tunes. Also, you can check us out on Facebook. Facebook.com/...
Big Planet Comics.
Oh, are you looking at me?
No, I'm just whispering. I'm just following Jared's lead.
Trying to keep it secret.
Or you can follow us on Twitter.
Yep. You should do that.
At Big Planet Comics.
Twitter. At Big Planet Comics.
Twitter been blowing up.
Has it been blowing up?
It's calmed down now.
Yeah, so now that we've got Jared back here, let's talk. Because we mentioned...
I gotta go.
We talked about it a little bit last week, the brouhaha. That Jared stirred up. I guess we all stirred it up.
We started that. We were all got
to be starting something. But Jared kind of he wrote the article.
I got riled after that podcast we did.
Indeed,
including us and that all of us. Yeah, sent the article. Wait, you want to talk about the letter or the article?
You know what? You take the lead on this.
All right. So all the Big Planet folks, all the co-owners signed off on a letter, which we sent as an open letter to the publisher and to several comics news outlets, if there's such a thing, complaining all about all the things we covered in the podcast 2 weeks ago, on all of our production and layout problems we had with Corto Maltese. And then I wrote an article that we put up on BigPlanetComics.com called How to Ruin a Comics Classic.
That's a good name.
And, with lots of examples.
I think it was even more more ebullient than that, right? Wasn't it called How to Destroy a Comics Classic?
Oh, it was. Sorry.
How to be Paul Pope, the Comics Destroyer.
Which you would think is normally to make comics great. This was not the case. And so I put lots of pictures and wrote an article about it. So you had some comparing and contrasting going on. And then I tweeted the link with Corto Maltese and How to Destroy a Comics Classic. And people like Scott Morse and, those kind of people retweeted it.
P-Pope.
And the Popes. And I was trying to figure out how many people got retweeted by it. And today, which is earlier this week, so like a week and a half later, someone retweeted it to his 25,000 followers.
Who was that?
Some guy I'd never heard of.
Was it Kevin Butler, the PlayStation guy?
No, it was Blair Butler.
Oh, was it Blair Butler?
The massive wrestling. No.
Wait, what? I don't know what
I'm
you're
just
talking
joking.
About. So how many did you? I know Jared was like, I'm going to count these retweets.
I lost count. Like, they're so far back now on Twitter, I can't find them all. But I was going to say 10,000, but considering one guy did 25, 100,000?
Mm-hmm.
I don't
Dang.
Know.
Crazy.
A lot. Yep.
I don't know if that's the right sound. Yep.
Jokes on Corto Maltese.
There we go. How many, Jared?
100,000.
So let's celebrate that. All right. So
Rizzoli wrote back and they had a nice thing, which we retweeted their response, which was, this was all approved by Hugo Pratt at the end of his life. And so therefore it's okay, thereby missing nearly everything we had to say about it. So I almost wrote a reply to that. And I said, everyone on the internet has made our point for us, and if they don't get it, they don't get it.
Yeah, they were like, well, our asses are covered. Like,
yep.
Not like, hey, you have genuine complaints about this.
Yeah. But there's all kinds of interesting stuff. Like, a lot of other people commented on, like, on the sites that were talking about it. Like, a lot of Europeans talked about it, that there were a lot of complaints in Europe about these editions that had previously been done. And apparently the smaller format that we got was reformatted to be republished in some sort of Italian magazine. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to break into a different Italian market with a reformatting of the book. And like several years ago, there was like a deluxe oversized, 50 euro edition put out. So there's a deluxe one. Then there's the regular black and white ones, like the old ones we got. And then there's the cut down colored new ones. So there's at least three editions you can get in Europe, unlike here. Yeah. but apparently people were complaining about the old editions there. But like maybe 4 or 5 years ago, like five or six publishers had gotten together and taken the original editions and published it just with the lettering taken out. So you print all the book and then you have a single color plate which just has the lettering in a different language. So you just put that in and you can print for six or seven languages.
Nice.
And it was apparently a perfect edition. So they're like, we don't know why they didn't use that one.
No.
It's been done.
You so. Guys.
Yeah. So well, anyway.
Yeah. So that was a crazy thing.
It was a good time.
So that's what Jared's been up to.
Causing trouble.
What have you been up to, Nick?
I'm watching some movies. I just saw Hunger Games.
Oh yeah. How was that?
It was pretty rad.
Jared, you saw that too, right?
I did.
I don't ever leave my house.
We were wondering about that. Someone did ask whether you were ever going to leave your house again, Kevin. No, I'm not joking.
I leave to go to work.
That's true. Yeah. You do live far away from work. You can walk to work.
Yeah. Hunger Games was awesome. I haven't read the book or anything.
Oh, really?
But,
you should read it.
Yeah.
It's got words.
I don't even know how to... I mean, people know what Hunger Games is.
That's true.
Yeah, I saw that. And other than that, I've been catching up on the... Or not catching up. I've been rewatching all of The Office.
Oh, really? The American one or the British one?
The American one, because my girlfriend hadn't seen it.
Oh.
I mean, the British one's pretty...
And how does she like it?
It's a lot more awkward. And
no, that's true. The British one is awful.
Yeah.
Less humorous.
Yeah. But yeah, it's been pretty good. I'm noticing a lot of stuff I forgot about. And I forget how like really funny it was for like the first three or four.
That is a ringing endorsement for seasons four and up.
It's still pretty funny, but yeah. Just not like in that level.
Yeah, it's sure. Lost a little bit the last season or so.
Sure.
Since Steve Carell left.
Yeah.
Sad times.
Wow. way to spoil it for all the other people.
Steve Carell. Yeah. What have I been doing? I've been playing a lot of Draw Something still.
Nice. Still.
Which is like
got some famous competitors.
I'm not gonna say their names. I'm not trying to put my people on blast. But yeah, it's fun playing Draw Something against people that actually are like professional artists and draw comics and seeing what they come up with.
That's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So cool. So I want to mention a couple things we have coming up. Even though I feel like increasingly we have more people that listen to the show that don't actually shop at our store.
Well, that's true. They can fix that if they want.
Yeah, so you guys should move here and come to our event on April 3rd.
Sweet.
Which is, we're doing the Avengers vs. X-Men early release party from 8 to 9 p.m. at all event. Four of our stores.
Event, not party.
Do we have to change it to party? I told Jared that a party indicated that there would be drinks and
a DJ. He wants
a DJ.
Punch a DJ and cookies. I'll see what I can
do. A foam pit. A foam machine.
That'd be awesome.
And
some glow sticks.
Yeah. Ecstasy. We're not going to have any of that stuff.
Sorry.
Except the ecstasy you will receive when you read Avengers vs. X-Men number one.
Nice.
And then on April 14th, we've got Justin Jordan and Trad Moore, the creators of the amazing Strange Tale and Luther Strode.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to be at our Vienna store and our College Park store.
Yep.
See our webpage for more details.
Oh, yeah.
And I just finished formatting the poster that Trad drew for that signing, and it's pretty sweet.
Yep, so we'll have a limited edition poster that you can admire and purchase.
Limited edition! Indeed. All right, so let's do some news. I got one news item.
What you got?
Here's the news theme. All right. I was looking for some news. There wasn't really a lot of exciting news.
It looked like really boring news.
Yeah, but one that caught my eye when I was looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
Was that Akira creator Katsuhiro Otomo is working on a new series.
I thought
of
he was
movies
dead.
That will run in a Japanese shonen magazine.
Of comics.
Wow. Yeah, comics, which is more exciting to me than
that's
movies.
That's astounding, yeah, because his last few movies have not been great.
Yeah, I mean, what was the last thing that Otomo did that came out comics-wise in the U.S.? Memories?
Oof. Did that even actually come out as a comic?
I think it did, yeah.
I don't remember ever seeing the comic version.
I mean, there's Akira, of course, most famously.
Yep.
And then Domu, which is long out of print.
Yep. Yeah.
And other stuff?
I thought he was dead right after Akira. He just died.
No.
No, he's still
directing movies.
Yeah. So I just thought that was exciting.
That's pretty awesome.
Should be pretty good. Well, hopefully it's good.
Yeah, hopefully it's good. I mean, he's an amazing artist.
Yeah, he's great.
He's a good writer, too. So
Yeah.
All right. So that's it for news.
That was it.
I was looking, I couldn't find anything interesting.
Yeah, there was some really boring news.
Yeah, it was like press releases about Marvel's AR initiative for their comics or whatever. Well, we had a copy of Avengers vs. X-Men number one, and it said AR all over it. And I was like, oh, that means it's like an advanced reading copy.
Yep.
But it's like some augmented reality thing where if like you read it through your phone, it'll like bring up extra stuff.
Oh, weird. So comics are like even weird to read.
You like put your camera from your phone on the comic and then...
Oh, is that really?
Yeah, and it'll be like animated or... They're calling it the future of comics.
And then Gambit like tries to bang your girlfriend or whatever.
That is definitely the future of comics.
That is the future of comics.
Keep an eye on those Cajuns.
Gambit's the new CEO of Marvel.
Start getting tweets from Wolverine.
That would be amazing.
We have a comic with Gambit in it this week, and I was like, all these X-Men characters, I didn't know who they were, and I was like, oh, is this girl's name Sherry? Anyway, so that's it for news. I just want to go around the table.
Okay.
Since we're always talking about comics, but we're always talking about new stuff.
We do like new stuff.
So I thought I would ask people, what's everybody been reading? Here's the theme song. So Jared, let's start with you. Have you been reading anything else that's not like a new series that reviewing this week?
I have been reading a huge amount of Corto Maltese books because I do have the older editions, so I've been going back and rereading them in sequential order, starting with the first appearance during the Japanese-Russian War in the 1904 era, where he first meets Rasputin, who shows up in Ballad of the Salt Sea, which I thought was kind of cool. And I've been rereading those giant Manara deluxe library books that we reviewed, the first one. Because they have Hugo Pratt stories in them, and those books are so pretty and such a nice job production-wise.
So is this you feeling like you have to be a Corto Maltese expert because now you're like the Corto Maltese guy?
A little bit, yeah. But no, it's also just like I haven't read those in like 10 years. I'm like, oh, these are good. I think I'm going to go and read all the Mobius books next that I've got.
And then we'll talk some crap about Mobius.
Now that he's passed, we can handle him.
We'll wait for some new terrible edition of a Mobius book to come out.
There's some news. So when he passed, 2 years? Just 2 years. 2 weeks ago or whatever?
Yeah, I think it was 2 weeks
ago. I just recently saw online a picture of his funeral, and it's like the cream of like the comic scene from the entire world all at his funeral. It's amazing. It's like Inky Bilal and Jeff Darrow and like, you know, the guy Charlier who did Blueberry. Like it's just everyone, and I'm just like, this is amazing.
He is Mobius.
Yep. It's cool.
He was Mobius.
He was. He still is Mobius on the airplane.
What about you, Nick? You reading anything?
Well, I was inspired by the recent Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles news.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you mean that the title is now officially Ninja Turtles?
Yes.
No, that is exciting. Oh, yeah, that is news.
Yeah.
What you got?
It's bad news. So I recently reread the original series, or started rereading it.
Are you falling asleep over there?
No, I'm just kind of sick. But they put out those like jumbo oversized editions,
deluxe
hardcovers. And like I just reread that. I guess it's the first 8 issues or whatever. And while I was reading, I just like cried.
Aww.
Thinking about the new movie and how it's going to be like the worst thing ever.
So does it hold up? I mean, I imagine it does.
Yeah.
Because I read it like six months ago. But
The weirdest thing is like how blatant of a like Daredevil parody like the first story is.
The first issue especially is like...
The first issue, and then it's weird because the tone completely changes like the second issue going on.
Is the second issue like sci-fi all of a sudden? Like that soon into it?
But it's like around there. It's like the third or fourth issue where the aliens, the TCRI aliens show up.
Yeah, and like the Triceratons and like Krang and all that stuff.
And the first issue is the only one that has like narration. It's like
really?
Dark night. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah, because it was a one-off.
Sure, I didn't realize they dropped the narration later.
That's it's like a Ronin. It's just a everything Frank Miller parody, basically.
Kids liked him back in the day.
Yeah.
But if nobody's ever read those, which probably a lot of people have read those that are listening to this, but if you haven't, read them.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
They're putting out, I don't know how many they're putting out, but...
I think all of them. They're doing at least all the main stories.
I saw at least that the third one was coming out, and I think that's the one with like...
Return to New York.
Yeah,
and that's like... That's like actually a really good place to like stop as well. I mean, there's still good stuff after that.
But that's like a good peak.
The City at War stuff later is pretty interesting. Yeah. Like when Image picked it back up later on or whatever. But that Return to New York stuff is awesome.
I'll just keep buying it until it ends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
all
I probably
of the
will
Teenage
too.
Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Until I won't buy the new stuff.
Oh, no.
Because they're putting the new series in one of those hardcovers too. And terrible. It's like, who wants to pay? Yeah.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. Yeah. Wow. I've been reading... The Thing.
John Carpenter's The Thing?
No. It's a series called The Thing. I think it's called The Dark End of Yancey Street.
Oh, yeah.
And it's... It was a series, Thing miniseries from 2003.
Yep.
That was written by Evan Dorkin and drawn by Dean Haspiel.
Yep.
It's an awesome comic.
And I had to buy it off eBay because...
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's not collected, which seems insane.
Never got collected. Holy crap.
Not that I saw. I mean,
I don't think it did.
They didn't really collect stuff. They didn't collect everything back That's then true. Like the way they do now. Yeah. But it's awesome. I mean, as you would imagine. Of course, Evan Dorkin writes Milk and Cheese, and he wrote a bunch of Superman cartoon episodes. And did he write some Batman episodes, too?
Yeah. I don't know. Probably.
Yeah, probably.
And
whatever.
And Dean Haspiel's an alcoholic.
And Dean Haspiel's an alcoholic.
Oh, wait, no, he wrote The Alcoholic.
And he's an alcoholic.
No,
and
he drew The Alcoholic. But that's cool.
He actually did not write The Alcoholic. It's
Keep
true.
Trying.
But Dean Haspiel is... what would most people know Dean Haspiel for? Zach Galifianakis on Bored to Death is Dean Haspiel, and all the stuff he draws on that show is drawn by Dean Haspiel.
Yep, he's worked a lot with Harvey Pekar.
Yeah, that's true. He did the Twitter. Yeah. Yeah, but anyway, it's awesome, and I would recommend that people buy it off
eBay.
Yep. Or if you just find it, I bet it's cheap. Yeah, but
it's only a 4-issue miniseries. So.
Yeah, but it would make a nice graphic novel. They should put it out.
In the show.
Yeah.
It's all our Marvel fans listening.
Yeah, so that's cool. It's good to know what you've been up to, what you've been reading.
Yep.
I like to keep tabs on
everybody.
All right, so we got a bunch of viewer mail this week.
What you got?
All right.
Let's do it. Here's our theme song. Oh, I thought I was going to keep going. I was going to start rapping Lose Yourself. All right, so our first email is from Nate Carlos, and Nate says, "Hey guys, here's a question for you."
Okay.
Yeah, we know, man, okay?
Oh,
what are some of your favorite characters? He loves the look of both Darkseid, Darkseid. Opinions, Darkseid. Jared.
I want to say Darkseid. It sounds lamer when he says it out
Darkseid.
Loud.
I say Darkseid.
Spelled cool.
Darkseid sounds weird.
Darkseid.
Darkseid is in Lost after Said goes into that water or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's Darkseid. Yeah.
Darkseid.
Yeah, and so he says he loves the look of both Darkseid and Ben Grimm, but I can never get it. He can never get enough of Fat Cobra.
Fat Cobra is awesome. I forgot about him.
He also says he likes how big a prick Damian is, which is one of my favorite things about Damian. But he hasn't read Batman and Robin in a while now. That seems like more information than we needed. He says, then thanks. And then he says his name, which is Nate Carlos.
Yep.
So, favorite characters.
Wow.
Come on, Jared.
I'm going to go with Nightcrawler. He's nice. Like an iconic look, and he's got a really good personality.
Is he swashbuckler?
Yeah, he's kind of awesome.
And he's a BAMF.
He does BAMF it up. That's definitely one.
That's Nightcrawler's your favorite character?
No, just the one that popped in my head. I got him.
He teleported into your brain.
That's what he did. It's his power.
Because I feel like I could name a character now that you like more than Nightcrawler.
Do it.
Maggot.
Usagi Yojimbo.
Oh, I do love Usagi Yojimbo. Dang it.
Jared can never remember the things that he likes.
I've read too many comics. Yeah. We should.
You're like Wolverine.
We should name each other's favorite characters.
No, we shouldn't. Nick's, we should just name yours because you can't remember what they
are. That's true. Nick's is D-Man.
Mine is the guy from Prison Pit, but I can't really say his name.
His name's Cannibal F Face.
Yeah, there you go.
F Face.
He's pretty great.
I forgot that I can just say F. You know what? F you guys.
WTF.
I mean, really, my all-time favorite is always Spider-Man. I mean...
Yeah. His Spider-Man.
Yeah. But so, I wanted to, you know, go with one that's not Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, that's good. You go with a more obscure one and then a good one. He says your favorite characters. So.
Another hero one is Morbius. I always loved Morbius.
Oh, yeah?
Huh? The living vampire.
Yeah, not the artist.
Yeah. Oh, you love him too, though.
Yeah.
He's a real character.
I always wanted Morbius to be drawn by Mobius. I thought it would be the greatest.
I looked and I don't think it ever happened. Oh, he drew Iron Man and a bunch of other stuff. But
yeah, that's true. He drew a lot.
A lot of people don't like Spider-Man, I've found.
Really?
That's weird.
They don't like the kind of...
I think people think they don't like him, but they don't actually read it.
No,
so they have, like, their own idea of what Spider-Man is, and they don't like that.
I think it's an idea that's, like, the things that seem to bother people are things that have been fairly accurate, maybe up until now, is that, like, he's always down on his luck, mm-hmm. even though he's really smart, and it's always, like, you know, he almost misses having, like, a good life and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, it just gets frustrating for people.
He's a comic book character. They all have kind of things that are constantly repeating. I mean, you can go with any of them.
Superhero comic book character.
Well, yeah. But, like, Batman, I mean, he's always dark and brooding, and, like... He's always one step ahead of the...
Well, and that's
That's
a complaint people would have, too. But I guess the Spider-Man thing is that, like he's always that thing, but that bugs them that he's always that thing. Like, not that he's always something, but it's that it's always that thing. It's like constantly watching, like, a Tom Hanks movie from the 80s just on loop for, like, 50 years or whatever.
Like Bachelor Party?
Yeah, like Bachelor Party.
That one's great.
Yeah. Oh, who are my favorite characters?
Batman.
I really do love Batman.
Yeah?
Yeah. I've always felt like Batman is a character who seems to be adaptable to any kind of story that you want to tell.
That's true.
Except like a Spider-Man story.
Yeah. You could put him in a Spider-Man story.
You could.
Kraken-wise.
You could.
And as much as I hate what happened to it, Cerebus is one of
my
all-time favorite characters.
And, milk and cheese?
I do love milk and cheese. Not as much as I did when I was like 16 or 15 or whatever.
It appeals
but,
to a certain age and a certain time, which would be the 90s.
That's true.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you asked me when I was like 8, I'd be like, Peter Porker. Spider-Ham.
You'd be like Spider-Man.
Probably, yeah. But I was also really into Spider-Ham at that
time. I used to really like Spider-Ham a lot, too. We've never actually talked about our idea for our Spider-Ham comic that we came up with.
Oh, God, yeah.
Nick
and
I came up with an idea for... this was right when the whole Spider-Man musical was like a big thing that people actually talked about.
Yeah, if we did it now, it would be like...
It'd be too late.
Yeah.
But it was called Spider-Ham Turn Off the Pork. And it was about the Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark play happening in the Spider-Ham world, and Peter Parker comes to photograph because the actors keep dying.
You mean Peter Porker?
Yeah, Peter Porker. Yeah, yeah. Sorry. I always get those
I'm
two mixed
these
up.
Universes confused.
And then while he's there, the guy that's playing Spider-Ham in the play dies.
Yeah.
And so they draft Peter Porker to become the new thing because he has a similar body type and they think that he could pull it off.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being a whole
thing.
Yeah,
like there's a villain killing people, like all the actors, and he fights them. Yeah.
I feel like that would be a great Peter Porker, the Spectacular Spider-Ham comic.
That's pretty awesome.
We should have a lot of characters in this because we wanted to do more like animal pun names. Like they have like Goose Rider.
There is Goose Rider. He's real. There's Captain America Cat.
That's one of the good ones.
There's a bunch of them.
What's the Hulk called?
Incredible
Hulk Bunny or something?
Yeah, he's like the Hulk Bunny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some were not that clever.
They did not try very hard on that one. Yeah. All right, so those are some of our favorite characters. Obviously, all of our favorite character is Peter Parker.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, thanks for the question, Nate Carlos.
Thanks, bro.
Yeah. And all right, let's go on to this next question here. This is from Mike. Mike is writing from the UK.
Hello.
Which is exciting.
Where's that?
He says, okay, here goes. Of the new 52, which are you disappointed and surprised to see dropped? So,
yeah, what are actually dropped of the six?
I think
Static Shock.
Not disappointed or shocked.
Hawk and Dove.
Very glad it's dropped.
Men at War.
That I'm disappointed with.
Nah. That one I'm ambivalent about.
I can't even remember the other ones. The true answer to this is none of them, because none of the ones that got dropped were, I thought, particularly good.
No. I would say Men of War, because I feel like that is a title that failed in its execution, like all the rest of them, but could have been saved.
But it's getting replaced by, like...
G.I. Combat.
Exactly.
Combat, which is also going to fail in its execution, because it's written by, like, J.T. Krull and...
Krull.
Howard Mack. That's I found out that's how you pronounce
it. Real name?
Yeah, J.T. Krull.
So he's been warning us all this time?
That he is a cruel man.
None of them.
And then this one, I don't know if we're going to be able to answer this, but he says, also, irrespective of tweets from DC Comics people, what's your view on whether Pandora is linked to Darkseid?
Don't know.
What?
Yeah. Supposedly, I guess.
Pandora's the weird purple lady.
The pink lady. Yeah. I don't feel like I know enough to answer that question.
Yeah. I think she's linked to their backdoor plan to bring the old universe back.
Yeah.
Well put.
Yeah. All right. Sorry about that one. And he says, and finally, have you visited any UK comic stores? If so, any opinion on them versus US stores? He says, Traveling Man UK has to be the best he's visited. They have the smaller US store style and their staff are great. No pressure when I move.
Yep.
Because it looks like he's moving here and he's going to start coming to Big Planet Comics.
I would have liked to have gone to a comic store in the UK, but the only time I've been there is I went to London for 10, 12 hours. Between the hours of 8 p.m. and 8 a.m.
You didn't just hang out at a store banging on it, hoping someone would open it.
Well, I wandered around the streets. It's a long story.
Yes, that's a good story, though.
See, when I've been to the UK, I've been to Forbidden Planet, which is not really my thing. It's more of like
the ultimate chain of stores.
Yeah, and it's like a very much like... like a geek,
like another
all-encompassing store. Yeah. Yeah.
You remember Another Universe?
Another Universe still exists. Jim Hamley's Another Universe, right?
No, it's no, the ones that Jim used to be around Hamley's. Here.
God, is that what they were called? Comics Universe? I think he changed the name. Oh. There were a bunch of them all over that owned by Jeppy.
But the best one I went to when I was in the UK, because I tend towards the smaller books and things, is I went to a store called Gosh in London. And I thought that store was really cool. They had a lot more indie comics, but then they had a lot of weeklies as well. Yeah. And they had a lot of like Moomin toys and stuff that. And they had they had a section dedicated to like animation art books, which is something that I'm into well. So yeah, it was a really cool store. I talked to those guys for a while. They're very, very much like the Big Planet Comics of London.
Yeah.
Which is to say that we're awesome too, I guess.
Yeah. I haven't been to a store over there since I was like a teenager. So I don't remember which ones I went into. The one I really want to go visit is Page 45, which is kind of like one of the, at least to me, legendarily, like, started up to focus on graphic novels and small press in the UK. But they're out in the Midlands somewhere. I can't remember what city they're in. So that's on my list to do.
Yeah, and as far as comparing them, it's like, I don't know. It's, I don't think I've been to enough there to compare them.
Right.
Like, before I even went to the UK, I had this impression of shops over there. In that they used to be very, like, more, like, run by fans and, like, very small and almost, like, people's apartments and things like that. But the ones I went to certainly weren't like that.
Yeah.
But then you get that same thing over here. I mean, there are a lot of really awful comic stores.
not many left.
Yeah, I'm not gonna name names, but there's some real stinky joints.
It's true.
Yeah, so, you know, it's you're always going to have the good and the bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thanks, Mike. Hopefully we'll see you when you head over here. Bring me some custard creams.
Nice.
All right. So we've got another question here from another guy named Mike, or Michael, because he wrote Michael, and I don't want to call him Mike and offend him. This is from Michael K. He says, just wanted to say the podcast is awesome.
That's true.
I thought I had applause on here.
Yay.
It gives him a little slice of home while he's off at school, and it's something he looks forward to listening to every week, which means he's probably somebody we know. We just don't know what his name is. He says, but other than telling you guys how great the show is, I mean, you can do that as much as you want.
He's done it twice so far.
He says he does have a legitimate question to ask. Oh. With the popularity of The Walking Dead TV show and comics like The Punisher, Green Arrow, Powers, and one of his personal favorites, Chew, becoming TV shows in the near future, I was wondering what comics you would like to see made into a TV show and or movie. Personally, he'd like to see a DMZ, American Vampire, or Super Dinosaur TV series.
Wow.
He took my answer with Super Dinosaur.
That was a good answer.
And maybe a film version of Severed or Stumptown. All good choices. You're making this harder for us when you do that.
He's like named everything.
No, because we've actually mentioned one earlier that we thought would be great was 100 Bullets, which would fit very well the kind of sequential format while telling a longer, awesome story.
Yeah, that would be a pretty great show.
It'd have to be like HBO pushing the limits of sex and violence, though. It'd be amazing.
I feel like we're probably going to say a lot of Vertigo series.
Yeah.
Because Vertigo have been very good over the past few years of telling long stories that are still engaging and sort of have hooks in each issue while telling bigger stories, which is what television is really good at, too. What about movies, though? I mean, we see a lot of movies of big, dumb superhero comics, but...
Before Watchmen.
You want to see Before Watchmen into a movie?
Well, actually, I'd like to see like 13 movies of Before Watchmen.
Yeah, that's why I was actually thinking about that the other day. Is Before Watchmen, does that exist so they can make a Watchmen prequel movie that's based on source material?
Did they make that much money off the film?
Watchmen did pretty well. It made like $200 million or something.
Really?
Yeah. God.
Ugh, I don't know.
Yeah. That's but I don't know. What do you think, Nick?
Movie wise,
Sure. Movie
Let's
wise,
do movies. Movies are interesting.
I don't know. Like all the things I'm thinking of are really long series. There's The Secret, the comic.
Oh God, yeah, I just reread that. Terrifying.
God, who was it by?
Mike Richardson.
Yeah.
That would be a really good creepy horror movie.
Yeah. I think so. I don't know if we actually talked about that on the show, but
might have come up around the Halloween time.
Yeah, we were talking about horror comics at the store the other day, and Jared was like, "Well, what's actually scary?" And Nick and I both said The Secret because it's a genuinely creepy kind of
creep me out.
Yeah. did you read it? Yeah.
I was like, oh God.
Yeah, it's definitely some creepy stuff. I agree with him that Severed would make a good series.
Creepy.
Super Dinosaur though would make a great TV show.
Like it'd be like the best kids cartoon.
Yeah, like Generator Rex or Ben 10, like that kind of thing. It definitely has that that feel to it. I'm trying to think of a good miniseries. I always thought Midnight Nation would make a really good TV miniseries or movie.
Yeah.
Which was, I guess, popular at the time, Michael Straczynski comic.
It was pretty big at the time,
that
yeah.
he did with Gary Frank about a guy that's being like ferried into the afterlife.
No.
Yeah.
I feel like The Boys might work as a movie, too.
Oh, wow.
A movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could do it as a
movie. I mean, you could do it as a
movie.
Series, but it's going to be like huge budget.
I think you're right. I think you could cram like most of the ideas in there into a movie.
Yeah, you could just have, you know, the main stuff with the boys like monitoring the Seven and all the terrible things they do,
and then
have,
take them out.
You know, big confrontation at the end or whatever. They could basically just do like the first and last storyline from like the book. You know?
There's a thing coming out right now called Loose Ends that hasn't finished up yet.
I was actually thinking about that.
That could make a really cool movie. Spaceman would make an awesome movie.
That'd be fantastic.
That'd be such a weird movie.
It'd be like it'd have to be like a French animated movie or something. Yeah.
That'd be so good.
But it would be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. A lot of this stuff is so cinematic these days. Comics take so many cues from movies. I mean, you look at something like Sin City. Like, I don't love the Sin City movie because it's this weird.
Exactly the comic.
It's like, well, and it's like Sin City takes these cues from films and then exaggerates them.
Right.
And makes them into a comic. And then the movie takes those cues then from the comic and exaggerates them again and makes this really weird cartoony.
Yeah.
Sin City is almost like watching like Who Framed Roger Rabbit or something to me, yeah. but without as much humor.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, I don't know. Those things that we said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hello. All right. So next one here is a long one.
All right. What you got?
Should I read this whole thing?
Read the highlights.
So Kevin Pyle, we reviewed his book last week, Take What You Can Carry. And we had a lot of stuff to say about it. And he just kind of sent us an email responding to some of the things. I might just read this whole thing. So sure. Here we go. He says, I enjoyed the review. It's great to hear a conversation obviously informed by a close read of the book on a couple things that came up. He says, yes, as suspected, the contemporary story is very autobiographical, almost everything but the thing you didn't reveal, which, you know, we were trying not to give anything away. In fact, it's still a mystery to me as to whether my dad or the deli owner arranged my community service. And while he was Asian, I don't actually know if he was Japanese, and I have no idea whether he had a childhood as depicted in the book.
Yeah.
Then he addresses what I said about kind of I felt like parallels were being drawn between the plight of this kid and then like what was going on in the internment camps, but that I kind of was turned around by the end of the book.
Yeah.
He says at one point someone mentions how the parallel stories might be seen as a comparison of the experiences. Of course, on some level it is, but this was something I really struggled with in that I didn't want to put the two experiences on the same level of severity because, of course, they're not. I had some sketches that drew a stronger connection between the geometric layout of the camps and cookie-cutter suburbs, but decided that this had the wrong effect. I think that's probably...
Yeah.
If he had done that early on, those early comparisons would have been even stronger. Also, I went a bit out of my way to make the main character in the contemporary not particularly sympathetic in that he didn't have some deep reason for stealing other than boredom and a love of risk-taking. So I'm especially glad that those comparisons fell away for you all. Sorry, this is a mouthful, as that was a bit of what I was counting on. My biggest fear in this regard is the reaction of actual internees, which I would imagine when you're writing something like this would be
heavy.
Like something that would weigh on you a lot.
Yeah.
But as it happens, a painting teacher I had in college was in the camps from age 3 to 6 and has done many paintings and performances about the experience. I sent him a copy of the book. He sent a message that couldn't have been more complimentary, so that was a relief.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. And awesome. He says, well, thanks again for the close read and insightful review. Maybe your podcast will actually inspire somebody to buy it. And then he gives a link for if people want more background on the story. We'll throw that
up on the
That up on the page with the podcast. Yeah. And then he just says, thanks, Kevin. Yeah. So that's Kevin Pyle who wrote Take What You Can Carry. And
sweet.
Yeah, it's cool.
Good stuff.
Yeah, we really like getting emails like that. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, so thanks, man.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so now on to more dumb questions. this one's from Christian. We got a lot of questions this week.
We do.
Oh, my mouth is getting dry. I just read a lot of stuff. Hopefully that was easy to understand.
Yeah.
Since you guys have had so much international media exposure,
yeah.
I think we all know the logical next step for Big Planet Comics. Since most of you guys seem to have musical talent, do you guys have musical talent? It's obvious that you should start a band. The big questions are, what is everyone's position in the band? Front man, drums, guitar, etc. So let's start with that.
Front man.
Who's going to be the front man?
It's obviously going to be you, Kevin.
All right, I'll be the front man.
Yeah. I'll do backing vocals.
Front man.
You're going to do backing? Well, no, Jared, you're like a DJ, right? So,
yeah.
So we'll do
I'm going to have a microphone, but I'll also be
singing
and keyboard.
You're going to be scratching?
Scratching and keyboard.
Nice.
What about you, Nick? What
scratching
are you
going
to do?
Keyboard.
I taught you how to play bass a little bit. You can play bass in the band.
Yeah. I like to play drums.
Yeah, Nick can play drums.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, you play bass drum.
So
bass
are you going to play something?
Since you can play bass and you can play drums. You can play bass drum.
I also used to play the viola. Maybe I'll play that.
Really? Did you used to play the viola?
Yeah.
That's really surprising. Like,
your image in my head just expanded in a radically new direction.
Well, the last
did you play like traditional Greek music?
No. I played it in like elementary school. Last time I played it was when I was like, I don't know, 8, 9, something.
Gotta get back in shape, man.
Yeah, you should pick it back up.
Yeah, I still have it.
We can do like music from Firefly or something.
That would be awesome.
I would play guitar
and sing.
Keyboard. I play both of those things.
So, mm-hmm. Guitar?
Yeah. I play the Game Boy.
I'll do some background vocals.
What would we name ourselves?
It'd have to be Somebody and the Somethings.
I think we should be called
The Big Planet Comics.
The Big Planet Comics.
Thor and the Mighties.
Thor and the Mighties? Sure, that's fine. We'll be called Thor and the Mighties. And our what is the name of our first album going to be? Of course it's going to be called How to Destroy a Comics Classic.
That'd be amazing.
And you just can't wait for the record release party. Actually, we're going to call it a record release event because we're not going to serve any alcohol. We're not going to have a foam machine or anything like that.
But it will be a party because it will be music.
Oh, there will be music.
It'll just be a lame party.
Oh, we have to play?
No.
I think I'm out of this band.
I thought we were just going to play our CD.
And then he says Christian. Oh, that's his name.
Oh.
It's not his denomination. Yeah, so Thor and the Mighties, How to Destroy a Comics Classic is going to be your first album.
Yeah.
And
party will be almost okay.
Yeah, so thanks for the question, Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I don't know what's going on. Now I want to record a Thor and the Mighty's song
sounds
called
amazing.
How to Destroy a Comics Classic.
We can do that right after this. Let's go down to
although what would actually happen is that I would play all the instruments.
Yeah.
I'll play something.
I'll do some singing.
Oh, yeah. You guys can do some singing.
I'll do some keyboard.
I have auto-tune on my, on my thing.
Try and fix it.
All right. So if you guys have questions, we'd love to get questions, obviously. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of questions this week.
Yeah, that was tons.
So I don't know if we need to solicit for questions at this point. But you should send them to podcast@bigplanetcomics.com.
Or tweet us.
Or tweet us.
Or,
this is new. This is exciting. We want you guys to do this. So, or you can call our podcast hotline.
Woo.
What?
At 1-703-539-CAST. That's 1-703-539-2278.
Nice. When did that get set up?
I just set it up last week. So you can leave a voicemail. And then we can download it as an MP3 and basically play it on here and answer it.
Yeah, unfortunately, our lawyer said that you're not allowed to have actual physical like voice interaction with us, so you will not speak to an actual member of the podcast, but you can leave a message.
That's true, but we're going to set up another number where you can talk to us about all kinds of nasty stuff. So let's do some reviews.
We love comics, they're swell, except when they're written by Scott Lobdell.
I prefer important books like Louis Riel.
It's time for reviews.
All right, review time.
All right, our first book this week is 3 books.
What?
I just blew your mind.
We're just trying to get through this really quickly.
When is a book 3 books?
We're like 40 minutes in.
We're chit-chatting.
Jeepers.
Sorry, folks.
Well, it's okay. My favorite podcast that I listen to every week is like 3.5 hours long. So,
nice. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do this. All right, so basically the Yoshihiro Tatsumi.
Some Japanese guy.
People I know from, he wrote Drifting Class, no, not Drifting Class.
A Drifting Life.
Yeah, I always do that.
Yeah.
One of and the Black Blizzard. Books. And then he wrote these 3 books that came out in hardcover, covering his work from 1969 to 1972, I believe.
Yep.
And they're Abandon the Old in Tokyo, Goodbye, and Pushman and Other Stories.
And like Tatsumi is like, he was definitely one of the guys, like a Drifting Life covers, we've talked about it before, it covers like kind of the evolution of like Japanese manga into like more of an alternative comic scene and how he was a huge part of it. And it's an autobiographical book about all of his life growing up and getting into comics. But these 3 years in particular, they're all short stories and they're kind of like some of the height of his stuff. And a lot of these were actually selected by Adrian Tomine or at introductions by him. And he did some of the translation.
Yeah, he did the translations as well.
Who, of course, is the genius behind Optic Nerve. So it's kind of interesting to see the American influence of, you know, this is some cool stuff I saw.
Yeah.
But yeah, like Kevin said, they came out in very nice deluxe hardcovers. But today we got all 3 of them re-released because these came out over like 3 or 4 years in a nicely matching match set of soft covers.
Yep.
And they're really good.
They're so good. It's just like all of them are just short stories, kind of, I don't even know what to call them. They're not, so I was going to say like Slice of Life.
Well, Gekika is the style that he kind of created, and these are very like they're good examples of that. I guess the reason they're hard to explain is because what makes them so different is that
new.
Is that everything up until that point was very like based in genres. It was like, you know, action comics for kids or mysteries or thrillers or sci-fis, you know, the kind of stuff we still see now.
This has a range of genres.
Yeah, and or they're not even really genres. They're just like these kind of little personal
like
stories.
Mood pieces and like, yeah, they're amazing.
A lot of them are
dark.
Very dark.
Yeah. Bleak.
I mean, one of the first ones I read was in Goodbye. It was about like this guy who was taking, he was like a photographer and he was taking pictures after like Hiroshima. And he found this wall that had like an outline of two bodies at the time of the blast, but it looked like a son massaging his mom's shoulders or whatever. And so he took a picture of it and then he made like a lot of money off of it.
Oh, wow.
And then this guy shows up and he's like, I'm the son that lived in that house. And the person who was, you thought was massaging was my friend I hired to kill my mom. And it's like really awesome. Crazy. And like he's like starts like asking him for money and blackmailing him.
So a lot of the stories are that tone.
There's cool twists like that.
Yeah. Well, and they all have elements that are similar to that. Or no, I shouldn't say they all do. But there's kind of an element in all the books of like, like the idea that the everyman in Japan, you know, just like regular guys.
Kind of anonymous, normal dudes.
Yeah. Being sort of pushed to the edge by varying things in their lives. So there's one about a man that you were talking about who's dealing with impotence and finally kind of snaps and ends up like peeing on a cannon. There are definitely a lot of stories with kind of Lady Macbeth type characters that are kind of these harpies that are, you know, supposedly destroying these men's lives and them kind of snapping and murdering them. That happens in more than one story. But they're just so interesting.
When Drifting Life came out, I recommended it. Topham, who's the manager over at our College Park store, and he loved it because Tatsuma was a genius.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, well, you know, he's got all these other books out of like actual stories, not all bio stuff. And he tried reading them. He's like, why did you recommend these terrible stories to me? And I'm like, because they're awesome.
They're really good. Yeah,
they are really good, but they're very, very dark stories.
Yeah.
I mean, what would you say about his cartooning? He's got a very simple style.
Yeah, it's not like...
It's immediately recognizable.
It's not super simple, like, not childish or anything. It's just, I don't know.
It's hard to explain,
but it's cool.
Yeah, it very much bridges the gap between, like, early anime or early manga guys like Tezuka and then, like,
right. The
kind of current generation of indie cartoonists, I would say.
Like in between those, that's a
especially good guys point. Like Dan Klaus and...
somewhere between Dan Klaus and Tezuka.
Yeah. Or like Tomine as well, somewhere in there. It's like indie guys now have so many different styles, but the guys that have tend to have the more reserved styles.
Right.
And he draws, it's simple, but amazing. And he's really good at drawing expressive faces, which is important to the kind of stories he tells.
Right, but really strong stories.
Yeah, really strong stories. And I can't recommend this highly enough. Of course, it's not for everybody, but if that sounds interesting to you, it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, so moving on to Astonishing X-Men number 48. It's so funny, like, jumping from that to this to me. But anyway, this is a
Nick Liapis request, because this is a new creative team.
Yeah, so this is Marjorie Liu and Mike Perkins. This is Marvel seemingly successfully trying to make all their X-Men books good.
Yeah.
And this seems like another step in the right direction, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, Astonishing X-Men has kind of gone from like one creator to another, it seems, recently.
Very much so.
The last one was Greg Pak and Mike McCone, which was good. And actually, those characters are getting their own series. But they've been kind of promoting this as a new creative team, and hopefully they'll stick around for a while. Because this is like a pretty unique X-Men book. It doesn't feel like any of the other X-Men books, which is pretty good. It's like, it's weird. Most of this issue is just talking heads.
Very character drama.
Yeah. Like, it's like the beginning's about North Star and his boyfriend, and then like the one of the ones about Gambit's friendship with Cecilia Reyes or whatever, who is a short time X-Men character.
I knew
who she was, but it doesn't really matter if you know who she is really. There's a little bit of hints of a story to come, and then at the end what are they called? The Marauders show up?
Yep.
The ones that killed all the Morlocks.
Mutant Massacre, baby.
Yeah. Marauders.
You had to tell me that. I didn't know that.
I mean, you don't really need to. You're just like, oh, wow, there's some crazy
bad
villains.
Show
I'm
up.
Sure in the next issue they'll be like, the Marauders are here.
Yeah. Know? But it's also like, of course, the opening three pages is like Wolverine and Gambit chasing North Star in the sewers trying to murder him.
Oh, yeah. And then
I'm like, Let's have some drama. I'm like, really? You can't do it one way or the other. It's like an X-Men book.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it adds a little tension to the other scenes. But yeah, it was a very kind of subdued.
Yeah.
I mean, as much as people chasing each other in the sewers and trying to kill them.
Fight scenes and screaming.
It definitely, the tone of it was a lot different. But that's one thing I think they've been doing a really good job of.
Definitely.
It's like Wolverine and the X-Men is a completely different comic from Uncanny X-Force is a completely different comic from this.
Yeah.
They all just have their own kind of tone.
Yeah. And this has such a weird team. The team is like Wolverine, Iceman, Gambit. Like, those are the main X-Men. But then there's, like, Northstar. There's Karma, who wasn't in this issue yet. who's the other one on there?
Somebody.
I don't know. That's a weird team. And the armor's not in this
issue. What is Karma's power? Does Karma have the ability to make Pauly D fist pump?
She does. Yeah, I don't know. But, it was a good first issue, and the art was by Mike Perkins, who drew a lot of the Ed Brubaker, Captain America stuff.
Yeah, he's got a good style, like kind of like us, like maybe somewhere between like Steve Epting and Mike Diodato or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, I know the character. I forgot. Warbird or whatever.
Oh, wow. Warbird is
Shi'ar one. Yeah,
she enters with much aplomb.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah.
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 Yeah. No, it's pretty nuts. Hopefully it maintains this tone. The stuff that happens at the end seems to be pushing it in a more generic direction. Yeah.
It feels like this will kind of be sort of like
a balance
somewhere between Captain America, like the Ed Brubaker Captain America stuff, and like X-Men stuff somewhere.
Huh.
That sounds good to me.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's Astonishing X-Men number 48. We'll see where it goes.
Yep.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to Avengers versus X-Men number 0. So this is broken up into two stories. One is about the Scarlet Witch and is written by Brian Michael Bendis and drawn by Frank Cho. And the other is about Hope. And that is written by Jason Aaron and drawn by Frank Cho.
Yep.
And these both are just
amazing.
Both sides of this conflict that's about to start. I felt like it was a good introduction with some pretty amazing art.
Yeah, like, so you just get, I don't know, it's like Scarlet Witch has kind of been off the scene for a while, which I didn't even realize how little they'd used her. Like, because she did the big House of M thing where most of the mutants disappeared because she got rid of them with her magical or mutant or whatever power. Whatever.
She recently just came back in, like, Avengers Children's Crusade.
Oh, so it was just that recently.
She's been in that, yeah.
And I just had never thought about it.
Yeah, like two weeks
ago. Yeah, and she shows up in this, and it's like she's kind of trying to be a superhero again, and she's really unsure of herself. And I just hadn't been like, oh, I guess she hasn't been doing anything in the Marvel Universe for, like, 7 years or whatever.
And there's a pretty interesting reunion between her and Vision. Which is really cool.
Yeah,
when I was reading that, I was thinking, people like to complain about Bendis so much that it's just all talking heads and stuff. But that talking head scene between Scarlet Witch and Vision is like, it's really affecting. I mean, it's really well done, and it's emotional and powerful. Yeah, and it's good. I mean, as powerful as a scene between Scarlet Witch and Vision probably has been.
Yeah.
And most of this issue is actually about Scarlet Witch fighting MODOK. So.
Yeah, that's true.
There's a lot of MODOK fights. Yeah.
And then the second story is Jason Aaron kind of expanding on a lot of stuff that's already been going on in Uncanny X-Men.
Yeah, between Hope and Cyclops.
Yeah, and kind of about the fact that the Phoenix is coming.
And
the
like
Phoenix
all the
Force.
Weird emotional backstory to, you know, Cyclops dealing with Phoenix before and like Hope's pressures and like a lot, again, like a lot of like social stuff, but also they're punching each other and
now
training.
He's,
and
he's kind of like indoctrinated himself into believing that like Hope is like the mutant messiah and we have to protect her at all costs. It's
and that
crazy.
The Phoenix, if it does return, will save them rather than wiping out the universe.
Yeah,
and it's interesting to see how Scott Cyclops has really been pushed in this interesting damaged psychological direction, which might be what it needs.
Yeah, and I think it works really well as an introduction that all feeds into our next book, Avengers versus X-Men number 1.
What? Advanced review.
Advanced review. Dun. We didn't know if we could do this or not, but then we looked and people reviewed it online.
I actually saw
that a lot of places were selling it already.
What?
Yeah.
That's not cool.
Those guys are going to get in trouble.
Because I know exactly how to report them so they lose their Marvel accounts.
Oh, Jared.
I'm going to bust them.
Don't do it. Anyway, so this is the story in this is by a lot of people.
Yeah, so basically this is going to be a 12-issue series, so it's going to be running for a really long time, but it'll be every 2 weeks. And basically all of the big writers at Marvel have teamed up to do the plot for it, and then it looks like at least this issue was actually written by Bendis.
But yeah, so it's Jason Aaron, Bendis, Ed Brubaker, Jonathan Hickman, Matt Fraction, and art by John Romita.
Yep, so you throw those guys together, you're going to get something pretty awesome.
I don't want to... Of all the things we've talked about, I don't really want to talk too much about this, but it does continue to build about off of the stuff we were talking about in Avengers vs. X-Men number zero, in that...
The basic story is, you know, the simple part without giving too much away is just that Phoenix is coming for Hope, and the X-Men want to keep her, and the Avengers want to examine her and take her into... You know, custody and figure out what's going on.
So yeah,
I think there may be some Avengers versus X-Men in this issue.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, I think that's probably about all that we should say.
Yes. Yeah, and you don't get much. You know,
there's not a lot more than that. Actually, to be honest, in this
first
issue,
first of 12 issues, so it's a lot of setup.
But it was good.
But it's done in a good way. If they're going to be using different writers for different issues, Bendis is probably the best guy to write the first one because he's good at explaining what's going on.
Right.
And it's a good setup, and it's definitely worth checking out. And some crazy stuff does happen in this.
Yeah. Kind of like Zero pulled me in more. Like, crazier stuff happens in one, but I thought Zero was a stronger
story. Well, Zero's more of like the kind of personal stuff leading into it.
So, yeah, like Zero's the kind of thing that would have been before like New Avengers Illuminati or like one of those kind of things. Or, well, I actually kind of felt that way about Fear Itself as well.
Yeah. I
liked Book of the Skull a lot better than the first issue of Fear Itself. But I thought issue one of Avengers vs. X-Men was awesome.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to have any kind of... you know, high-mindedness about it.
Right.
It's pretty simple, but then it's the kind of thing that you can argue about too, which is nice because that's always good.
And there's a cool thing at the beginning of the issue that's like kind of a tally of where the teams stand. Like, these are the Avengers, and these
on
are the
inside
X-Men.
Front cover. So
yeah, and so you see like where the Avengers are and how many X-Men there are and how many Avengers, and it's cool because I feel like as the series goes along, like a lot of that will move around. So.
And the other interesting thing about that little chart is they also have a line separating the two teams, and there are several characters on the line.
Well, yeah, obviously, because some of them are on both teams.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right, yeah, so that's Avengers vs. X-Men number one, and like we said, we're going to have that Tuesday at
8 o'clock. So technically on sale at 8 o'clock, but it will normally ship next Wednesday. So
yeah. So, cool. All right, moving on to...
What's next?
Bloodstrike number 26.
Bloodstrike.
By Tim Seeley and Francesco Gaston.
Don't you mean Nightstrike?
Or Blood... Sling Stone?
Sling Stone?
Blood Raven.
I don't even want to talk about this book, you guys.
I want to say one thing, which is that Francesco Gaston, whose name is pronounced with a ch, but without an H in it, has his name misspelled on the front cover with an H.
That's awesome.
Yep. Good times.
Go Extreme Comics.
Kevin really loved this comic. Well, it's weird. The weirdest thing is comparing this to the other Extreme things that have come out, like Prophet and Glory, which are both really good and completely different from what they were before. I feel like this is a lot closer to what it used to be.
Yeah.
But better, probably.
I'm
than it
sure.
Used to be.
I
didn't
guarantee.
Like it, and I bet it's better than what it used to be.
Yeah. Yeah, the basic gist of this is there's like a guy who's like... his name is Wade Wilson. No, Slade
Wilson.
No, wait.
Wait, no, Wade Wilson.
What is his name? It's something Stone.
His name is Cabot Stone.
Cabot Stone. He's like...
his name is Cabot Stone Creamery.
Yeah. He's basically like Rob Liefeld left Marvel, and then he created this character that's like Deadpool. Because
well,
he created Deadpool,
well,
too.
Created...
Well, he created Deadpool.
He drew Deadpool again.
He created Deadpool, and then he was like, yeah, I can't really do any more Deadpool stories. I'm not working at Marvel, so I'm going to create this guy that's Deadpool.
He's like, what thing's pool? And he's like, blood. And then he's like, oh, what? How do you make somebody dead? You strike them. Blood strike. Yeah. He's like, strike blood.
Oh, wait, that doesn't sound good.
Yeah. Blood strike.
Yeah, and so basically he's a zombie, and the government sends him on missions, and he dies, and they regenerate him.
So not like Deadpool at all.
No.
Nope.
But one of the things
got like some weird eye patches on his costume, so
yeah,
look like
and he's
Deadpool.
He's kind of been around for a long time and has had various superhero identities. I thought the thing that was kind of cool in this was like the twist that like a lot of the government people have contracts to like reanimate themselves if anything happens to them.
That was kind of cool.
It's really weird, yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
Like that was certainly the thing they did at the end to try to get people to read the next issue.
Yeah.
Yep.
I like my favorite part about this is that when Knife Blood takes his hat off or whatever, his eyes still have the Deadpool shape over top of them.
We don't want to get confused about who that character is.
That is my favorite thing about Fist Strike.
This is, for me, is like a fun superhero comic. I'm not saying good. I'm not saying great, but it was fun. Like, it had some moments, like when the mummies show up. There's like some good dialogue.
I didn't hate
it. Interesting twist.
That's what I was like. I was like, Nick, I bet you like this part where the mummies show up.
I mean, it was kind of cool. I like the weird twist. But anyway, like, it's kind of fun, but it's not like anything I would read again.
It seemed to me like a thing that was trying very hard to be a fun superhero comic, but it just wasn't firing on all cylinders for some. Like they show up, they're like, oh, it's mummies with laser guns. And it's just that kind of like pandering, like, here's a thing that people will think is cool because it's mummies with laser guns. Yeah. And I don't know. I feel like
worked on me.
I was already
I think you've been lost at that point.
So I was just. Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, he acts exactly like Deadpool.
Yeah, the thing is, I thought this was like, you know, I didn't hate it. I thought it was all right, but it's definitely...
It's broken up by these scenes of Bloodstrike with his therapist that I thought were all really stupid and, like, just kind of, like, supposed to be kind of funny and, like, a different take on superheroes and just didn't work for me.
And it's definitely something that I would not read the second issue.
Wow, I think I like this more than both you guys.
I mean, I liked it, but it was like... I enjoyed it. Like, I never, like, when I was reading it, I never... wanted to stop reading it, and I was like, oh, this is good, it's engaging.
I would say, Jared, you've probably read less stuff like this, too.
That is true.
So it's not like...
Like, it was kind of funny, and I liked the twist, and then, you know, but it wasn't, like, enough where I would want to read anymore.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Competent, but not
It was enough that I would not want to read anymore.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so that's Bloodstrike number 26. Pick it up at your local comic book store.
Woo.
Up next, we've got Cinema Panopticon. By Thomas Ott. Thomas Ott does really creepy comics.
Yes.
I think he does everything on Scratchboard, which is pretty interesting. So, like, Scratchboard is like a black paper, and then you kind of scratch the image into it to make white on top of it. And I'm pretty sure that's how he does everything. If not, he does a really good job of making it look like that's what he does.
Yeah.
He's Swiss.
He is.
Yeah, and he typically does silent comics,
I might have done a few with words, but I can't remember any for sure.
That all sort of have a Twilight Zone-ish, O. Henry-ish kind of...
vibe.
Yeah, vibe to them. And this is more of that kind of a few short stories that are structured around...
An awesome framework.
Yeah, of this girl who's in like a Nickelodeon of Odysseys.
Yeah,
if anybody knows what a Nickelodeon is, it's like old crank movie reels that people would pay, like in penny arcades.
Yeah,
if anybody knows what penny arcade is.
Nope.
But but so that's the framework that's used to tell these different stories, and they're all just little short, little horror stories with twists in them that
are from the Crypt style.
Yeah, that are all. I don't want to say one-dimensional, but they all do have kind of like a hook. So it's kind of hard to talk about any of the individual stories. I've always found it hard to talk about Thomas Ott. I try to sell people Thomas Ott comics, and I'm like, just look at it, and you'll know if you want it or not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the art's amazing, but it can be put off if you don't like it. But I think the art's great, and just these are creepy stories with a cool twist, and you'll enjoy it if you like that sort of thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot more depth in this without any dialogue than there was in all of Bloodstrike.
I definitely think that's true.
Which had a lot of
I would say if you're a fan of Charles Burns... Then this is probably something that would be up your alley.
As they say.
As they say.
Nickelodeon studio.
If you know what an alley is.
Yeah, yeah. It'll be
Nickelodeon studio.
This will be up your tin pan alley. All right. So moving on to, this is Gone to America hardcover. Did Vertigo put this out?
It did.
Mm-hmm.
This is by Derek McCullough. Don't let the name fool you. He's not actually Irish. And Colleen Duran. They make a point of saying
that. Irish-American.
They make a point of saying that in the back. So this is a... I would say a pretty ambitious graphic novel.
Yeah.
And I thought it was pretty good.
I thought it was awesome. I think this is another one where I liked it more than you guys. It's basically an ambitious tale of three sort of immigrants to America over different time periods, one in the late 19th century, one in the 1960s.
60s, yeah. Early 60s.
One in the current day. Well, the current one I wasn't sure about. Is that the main character actually Irish or just a musician?
Yeah, he's an Irish, and he's looking for like kind of... some Irish history. He's trying to find the origins of this
right
song.
I just wasn't sure if it was Irish.
He's kind of like the Pogues or something like
that.
He's like
rampaging
a really rich
America.
Rich dude.
Yeah, so you get these three, which I think they did a pretty good job with in the writing style, and then Duran doing the layout for it, where you'd have entire pages where it'd be one panel set one time, the next panel would be in the exact same setting, like 80 years later, yeah, with the different characters. So you got to see a lot of New York. It's almost all the scenes are set in New York with a few flashbacks to Ireland. So you get a lot of scenes of New York changing over the years and the various crazy different ways of life at the time. But yeah, like Nick said, it's largely the plot is this, in the current day, an Irish musician trying to find the history of a song and being led around New York, which all ties into the previous story, which ties into the previous story as well. So it's
and he ends up solving an old mystery over, yep, over the course of it. But yeah, I thought it was pretty good. There's a couple things I didn't like about it. Namely, the weird possession thing. I don't even know how to.
There's a lot of elements to this book. It's not as straightforward.
You mean the supernatural
thing.
Element?
Yeah,
mean,
yeah, but there's a supernatural thing in it that only happens on one very small part of the book that is kind of weird and out of nowhere. Because it's all pretty straightforward. Most of it's the one story is about this woman and her daughter who are trying to live in the really poorest part of the city and trying to find jobs, and the other one's about struggling musician in the 60s, and then out of nowhere the one guy gets possessed by this spirit that tells him, gives him all
I think that gives away a little too much. I mean, that's kind of the end of the book.
But
I mean, that's the whole
anyway.
I don't know. The structure was interesting, I thought. I actually thought it was pretty well written. I'm not a huge fan of Colleen Duran's artwork, so I mean, but I wouldn't tell people not to read this because it's, that's just a preference.
Yeah, I thought she did some great stuff with the art, and that each time period had a different look to her art.
Yeah.
So there was definitely and the coloring too, but a sepia toned feel to the 19th century stuff, and then kind of updated it with the other two time periods.
I feel like it can be really beautifully crafted at times. I just feel like it's a little stiff for me, and sometimes it's not comicsy enough for me.
She did a good job of setting up kind of the time period though.
Yeah, definitely.
The way the city looks at the different points is exactly how it probably would look there. Fashion is all kind of the time, and in general, I agree. I don't really like her art that much, but it's well done.
It's well, I feel like it's very well researched.
Which is not vibrant enough.
Yeah, it's just not vibrant. Yeah, I think that's probably a good word. But overall, I thought this was a really good graphic novel.
Yeah, I thought the story was really compelling.
I've never read anything I've read things that have been broken down into different time periods and how they reflect against each other. But to have the way the three stories connect to each other, I think is pretty interesting.
It's not just one to the other. It's all three interweaving with each other backwards and forwards. It's very interesting and well done.
One thing, I know I've talked about this on the podcast before. I hate reading songs in comic books.
There's a lot of music.
some of the even better writers seem to use that a lot, and it's just something that never really works for me.
Unless it's a super well-known song that you can kind of sing.
Yeah.
Where you're getting the feel from it, like a movie soundtrack.
Yeah, and then you can kind of match the rhythm to, if they can really do a good job of sort of matching the rhythm to the art and stuff like that, I think there's something to it. But overall, I find generally that graphic novels that are focused around music tend to lose something for me because I feel like they're not presented in perhaps the best medium that they could be.
Right. I mostly skipped over the music parts in this.
It's the same thing with Chico and Rita. It's I thought the Chico and Rita graphic novel was good, but I felt like it would have made a better animated film because of all the music and stuff in it. And it does make a better animated film.
Yep.
And I kind of felt the same way about this. I mean, this seems to me like something that would maybe be better suited to a film or a TV series or something like that.
This would be a pretty cool movie, actually.
Yeah. So I just don't know that a comic book is the
best.
Still, for me, the best medium for writing about music. It's I don't know. That's just my thing with me.
A lot of this is about the story behind the musicians themselves. So I feel that story is great. I agree that there are parts where people are singing, and that is, falls a little flat.
Yeah.
But the rest of it,
but
I think the story behind the music's really good.
But I'm nitpicking, I guess, because I still enjoyed this.
Yeah, again, we're being very critical about something we liked.
yeah, which is, that's what's always going
to
happen. Yeah,
this was ambitious enough to have things to talk about.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I never got bored, and there's a really cool kind of twist to it.
Yeah, I mean, we read a lot of stuff on here, and a lot of times I get halfway through, and I'm like, oh, do I have to read this? But I was actually wanting to find out what happened in the end, and I did have some of the same problems that Nick had with, the kind of supernatural elements and kind of the way that that wrapped things up. But yeah, it's still overall, it's a really interesting graphic novel. And if you like, I don't know, what would you compare this to?
Oof. No idea. Ghost.
Yeah. Ghost. I mean, it's got a little bit of that, like a Boardwalk Empire feel to it at parts. Yeah. But Ed that's would. Probably just me because it's
like, it's kind of like the gangs in New York where you've got like a very vibrant, evocative setting or something based around good characters.
Yeah.
Certainly
so
not as violent as that, but there's some violence.
Yeah. But overall, pretty interesting graphic novel.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's Gone to America.
Good times.
All right. Up next, we've got the, Legion of Monsters soft cover. This is by Dennis Hopeless, who actually wrote that, X-Men season one thing,
which was great.
Oh, really?
Which was really good. Oh. And the art on this is by Juan Doe, who I think is the same guy that drew the, Fantastic Four, Viva la Muerte, or whatever that was called. Yeah. That comic was awesome. They released like the Spanish version of it.
All right.
Yeah. But this is kind of a continuation of some of the characters from Frankencastle.
It's got one of my favorite characters.
Who's that?
Morbius.
Morbius, the living artist.
Indeed.
Yeah. So, Nick, I feel like you're the guy to talk about this
Nick
book.
This was one of my favorite miniseries of this year, which the. You know, pretty short year. I mean, so far, it's only been like 3 months, but, and I think it started last year. But anyway,
it did.
Legion of Monsters is about Morbius and some of the other, kind of universal monster type characters that Marvel has had over time, like Werewolf by Night and, there's like a mummy and there's like a Gill Man and
the classic horror monsters.
Yeah. And, this is about the like in Frankencastle. It was established that all these Legion of Monsters kind of live in the sewers with like every kind of monster. Like there's kind of a monster society that lives in the sewers, and they're all kind of like normal, but they're just, you know, monsters. And then all of a sudden, like a lot of monsters start turning into real monsters. They start like killing people like randomly, and like Elsa Bloodstone, who's like a monster hunter, shows up and she's trying to kill all these monsters. And Morbius is like, no, we need to cure them. Like, there's, like, a virus going around. And that's basically the setup. And then, you know, they're trying to find out what's happening and fighting monsters along the way. It's really funny. It's constantly really funny. There's some really great character stuff, especially the relationship between Elsa Bloodstone and Werewolf by Night. Because she, like, hates monsters at the beginning and slowly, like, comes to see that, you know, there's, like, little kid monsters. And just they're just, like, you know. Another race, basically, and it's really good. It's great. It's got great action, great comedy, and just
it's like kind of the king of the pulp that Marvel can do so well that other companies just tend to ignore.
Yeah, and Hondo's art is incredible.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, like you were saying, I think his art really lends itself to the comedy and action in this because he's got a really kinetic art style. It's like very like everybody's kind of stretchy.
Yeah,
but in a good way. It's not like it's not inconsistent or anything.
Yeah, and it's not overly cartoony.
Yeah.
Either.
And the humor in it's really good. It's like, it kind of reminds me of Next Wave a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, it's not as self-referential as Next Wave, but it's very, like, over the top, like Next Wave.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's pretty much it. I think you covered a good bit of it.
There you go.
Yeah. So that's Legion of Monsters. I mean, if you like Frankencastle or you just want to read or Next Wave or you want to just read a fun story about monsters,
it gets my highest recommendation.
It gets Nick's highest recommendation. 3 thumbs up.
Yep.
All right, so moving on to the new Deadwardians, number 1 of 8. This is by Dan Abnett, who is probably most well-known for writing a bunch of Warhammer novels.
Yep.
But he also wrote all the Annihilation stuff from Marvel.
Yeah, he's
Legion of Superheroes for a long time with
he's been writing,
cohort.
Yeah, he's been writing with Andy...
Andy Lanning.
Andy Lanning with, like, for years.
Yeah,
like.
But this one he's writing on his own.
Yeah.
And the art in this is by Ian J. Colbard, who is incredible. We talked about
raved about him recently.
His At the Mountains of Madness book that that came out.
We loved. He's also done several Sherlock Holmes graphic novels over the last few years, which we also recommend highly. He's very good. And apparently, I was tweeting with him, he's got the adaptation of Princess of Mars coming out soon.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Going to be amazing.
Is it one of the Marvel ones or just another like
one.
Sterling or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... The setup in this is kind of a cool, different take on some horror stuff. Basically, well, you guys had to explain it to me because I got it wrong. So, Jared, why don't you tell me what this is about?
All right. So, this is a nice Victorian era, not Victorian, but very set in Britain when they still got a very... Like, the main character is a posh lord, shall you say, who is, after some sort of apocalypse, apparently there's very few people left living in London. and you quickly realize that, in fact, there's huge amounts of zombies running around. And
there's, like, sections of the city cordoned off.
Yeah, so they live in an A section, but everything else is a B section where there are too many zombies and people are panicking, like the lower classes are trapped out there.
Yeah.
But, of course, you know, being a lord, he's still got lots of... got lots of servants and stuff. But the opening scene is one of his servants is attacked and bitten by a zombie. And so there's huge panic. Like, what are they going to do? And he's like, you must take the cure. And it becomes apparent that the cure, which is running through the aristocracy, is that they become vampires to avoid becoming zombies.
Yeah, the cure is to become a vampire because vampires can't die, so they can't become zombies.
Yep.
It's a cool twist. And, well, that's not even the twist, but...
Yeah, more.
And this guy's... He's also, like, a detective.
He apparently is one of the last members of Scotland Yard or something.
Yeah, he...
Crime scene investigators.
He was in the zombie wars or whatever, like, they called it. And there's a cool twist at the end of this that kind of sets up the basic mystery.
Yeah, he's off on a case, basically.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, I mean, I think we can tell people what it is, because, you know, we want people to be interested.
It's a good...
Basically, one of the people who has been cured is murdered. And,
but not by, like, the traditional
vampire
ways.
Yeah, not, like,
staked
through the heart or anything.
Yeah,
murdered
so,
in an unusually impossible way.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. The stuff you were saying about, like, he was in the zombie wars, I feel like they did a really good job of, like, setting up this universe.
Yeah.
It's almost more modern than you would think it would be because it's so different than the time period it takes place in because things are just so different.
Yeah, it's like an alternate version of history.
Yeah, and I just thought it was great.
I thought it was awesome.
I love I love Colbard's art. It reminds me a lot of Disraeli, who was amazing. And, I don't know. This was a really good first issue. This is part of Vertigo's new line. We talked about, well, not new line, but the kind
there
of new series of books.
Yeah.
They did Fairest, which is, you know, amazing. If you read Fables, it's Fairest. And, Saucer Country, which we liked a lot.
Very good.
And then Dominique Laveau Voodoo Child, which we did not like at all. And this, which I think is another really good start. This one's a mini series though, as opposed to the others, which are ongoing.
But 3 out of 4 ain't bad.
I think this is really good for a mini series. Like, it'll make a really strong graphic novel that I'm sure they can do more graphic novels with later or more mini series. But I think having a single case will make it a really good story.
Yeah, definitely. So this was a good start to hopefully something pretty good.
Yep.
Cool. All right, so up next we've got Rachel Rising, Volume 1, The Shadow of Death. This is by Terry Moore, who did Strangers in Paradise and
Echo.
And I'd say this has a similar feel to Echo in a lot of ways.
Yeah, it's kind of like him trying a new genre out. Like, Echo is definitely a kind of sci-fi with tinges of horror, and this is just straight-up horror with his typical drama that he got from Strangers in Paradise.
Yeah.
The main character, Rachel, is literally rises in the first few scenes where she digs herself up out of the ground, where she has been buried in a shallow grave and stumbles home confusedly to realize that it's 2 days since she last remembers anything.
And she's got like a mark around her neck.
She was strangled and has weird memories of being strangled by some masked person or, you know, someone she couldn't quite see right before she lost consciousness or memory. And most of her friends who seem to think that she has in fact died. Mm-hmm. And that is the twist. But then more weird supernatural stuff starts happening. More people might be getting murdered or coming back from the dead or being zombified. And then, of course, they realize that the top of the hill where everyone goes, the makeout point, was the scene of 100 burnings of witches in the, you know, back in the, you know, pilgrim days or whatever. Yeah. So some good setup for
it's
some
really
crazy
good.
Horror stuff.
There's a lot of cool, like, creepy stuff in this. Like, when she's like back in the land of the living, except nobody seems to believe she is Rachel.
Yeah.
Which is a really weird thing.
That's true.
Yeah, they're
no
like, you're not
saw
Rachel.
Her die, so yeah.
Yeah. It's weird that, there's some weird thing going on where people can't recognize her.
Her eyes are definitely, like, unnaturally changed. But other than that, she looks like she used to, so.
Yeah. It's cool. It's got a lot of cool twists, and I'm sure it'll be like Echo. Probably, like, a good, you know, like, 30 issues or 20-something issues. And, it's really solid, really creepy, and... Yeah, good character stuff.
Lots of good characters in it. And this is just the first 5 issues in this first trade, but already more characters being introduced and a lot more twists and really developing up. And the other creepy part is, so as she's digging herself out of the grave, there is a woman standing on a little bluff up right above her watching Rachel dig herself out of the ground. You're like, who is this woman? She's important.
There's lots of mysteries, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's Rachel Rising Volume 1.
Yep.
Like a lot of our things, a good start.
Yes,
good horror comic.
Yeah. Yeah, a good horror comic, which is something we're always looking for.
Yep.
Yeah, cool. Next up, we've got another I'd call this a horror comic.
Which one?
Rohan at the Louvre.
Yeah.
It's pretty
creepy.
It's pretty creepy, yeah. This is by Hirohiko Araki, who I think this is the first thing he's actually done that's come out in English. One of our customers was saying that he had some volumes that came out in France that he has. But yeah, this is definitely the first thing I've seen from this guy. And he's an amazing manga artist.
Yeah. This is part of the, what is that line called?
The Louvre. I don't know what the line Louvre is, line but
the, yeah, the other one's like the sky over the Louvre, and yeah. But they're all just kind of very loosely tied in.
I think it's basically the Louvre, the big museum in Paris, the art museum, has sponsored a series of comics of people just like, if you were inspired by the art in the museum, draw a comic about it.
Yeah.
And this is the fourth or fifth one they've done. Different people have tried. And they've all been super weird.
Yeah. This one's
but
basically
largely dealing with the museum.
The gist of this one is that there's this guy who's gonna training to become like a mangaka, just basically just a manga artist. And he meets this woman, and she tells him about the most evil painting ever painted, with the deepest black ever seen. And he goes to find the painting, and then crazy things happen.
Crazy yep. things happen.
Yeah, so if someone tells you about the most evil painting in the world, don't go looking for
yeah.
it.
Yeah. If you're going to take one lesson from this book, I think that would yes. be the thing. But, yeah, it definitely turns into a horror comic, I'd say, in the vein of something like Junji Ito.
Yeah.
It's his the guy's art is really great, though. It's nice to see – usually you see manga in these kind of small black and white books, but this is like a nice full color album and his art's really great. He has like a nice it's just got a lot of life to it.
It's a weird mix. It's kind of like, who's it, Bronson, who did Fist of the North Star, where you've got like really, I don't know, kind of like, I wouldn't say punk rock, but you know, that kind of like, I don't know, just the styles of the lines and stuff is like not a very smooth or polished like cutesy manga style, but like really sharp and evocative and kind of, I don't know, can't describe it, but it's awesome.
And that style really lends itself to the back end of the story, which right. is kind of the more horror thing that deals with this painting. And so he kind of, the painting kind of comes alive in a sense, and he's really good at representing that. I feel like that's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
And he does a really good job with it. This comic actually creeped me out a little bit.
Me too.
Pretty creepy. Yeah.
Which is, we were talking about horror comics at the store earlier today, and just that because
and on here earlier today.
Yeah, well, that's true. But just in that, when you read comics, you kind of choose your own pacing,
right.
and so it's harder to scare people. You don't get like the cheap.
It's safer.
Yeah, you don't get the cheap thrills like jump scares that you can get in like movies and things like that, and it's a little harder to build tension because you don't have those support beams of like music and like
pacing.
It's harder to get the lighting right and stuff like that, and just make it really creepy. But he does a really good job of it. As they go deeper and deeper into the bottom of the museum, it's like the tension builds and builds. And once they get there,
things start happening. You're like, oh, God, here we go.
It's like scary. It's pretty scary.
Yeah.
And because of that, I think it's really successful.
Yeah. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. It was
also a really good story, too.
Yeah. Definitely a really good story. The tonal shift between the first half of this book and the second half is like amazing and makes it even better. So,
yeah,
it's great stuff. I think one of the best things that came out this week.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so we just got a couple more things. Up next, we've got The Sincerest Form of Parody, the best 1950s mad-inspired satirical comics softcover. That's a mouthful.
Man, is this wacky.
Yep. It is definitely wacky. So this is, we'll have a pretty full list of the creators up on the webpage, but just to mention a few people.
Some highlights.
Jack Davis is in here, Dick Ayers, Jack Kirby, Joe Simon, Bill Everett, Dan DiCarlo, Ross Andrew, Mike Esposito.
And a bunch of
Bob Powell. There's a bunch of good people. But those are like the big names, and there are a lot of other names that are actually pretty familiar in this list too. So what this book explores is right after Mad Magazine launched in the 50s, it became hugely popular.
Yeah, because like when Mad Magazine launched, not like what we see it today, it was the first 10 or so issues, or maybe even longer, were just comics. It wasn't a magazine. It was a magazine format of comics.
Yeah, and it was a parody satire comic, but it was not like Mad now, where it's just like, you know, like, oh, it's Pooper Man or whatever. You know, it was more lampooning genres and things like that, or in a more general kind of vague way.
Yeah.
And most people would probably agree, a funnier way with much more amazing artists like Harvey Kurtzman and Jack Davis and stuff. So because of its popularity, all these other magazines started popping up at the same time. Or actually, they were comics, because Mad switched over to a magazine because of the comics code and stuff. But that's a whole other thing. But all these comics started popping up, like Get Lost was probably one of the bigger ones. There was one called Yeah. And there's like, of course, Cracked is a famous one, but I think that came much later.
Riot.
Yeah, it's just like all these single word kind of things that are similar to Mad. Like one was called Madhouse.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that was one that Archie Comics put out, actually.
Yeah.
But so this just collects a bunch of stories from those.
It's like three or four of the best stories from these magazines. And the fascinating thing is they break it down into sections by each publishing house. So a lot of them, like, you know, you get Jack Kirby, all the ones he did for the company he's working for, and all the ones from the Iger Studio. So there's certainly a theme and often the similar artist or not the same artist between each one. But they're all basically trying to rip off Mad and be as successful. So,
and some of them are really successful and some of them are not.
Yes. Yeah, it's not like everything in here isn't great, which means that probably a lot of this stuff was really, really not great.
Yeah.
But it's a really fascinating... I mean, this was all in the period of like 2 years that all these things popped up and then disappeared
and failed again. Yeah.
And
dropped.
It's publicly. Just kind of an interesting thing to read.
Yeah, and there's a fascinating introduction and then a thing at the end that kind of tells you the history of... you know, this stuff and has like detailed analysis of it. It's really good.
Yeah, I think a lot of these things we talk about are like awesome comics historical artifacts. They may not be the best comics just to read on their own, but as an object, they're fascinating.
Yeah, and it's always, I mean, for example, with this, I mean, there's stuff in here that's great. There's there are obviously a lot of great artists in here, but for me, the introduction was more interesting than most of the, actually reading most of the stuff in here.
I mean, the comics are not the strongest point, but again, they are in the Mad style, so you can just see like the artist being let loose to just fill as many gags and as many sights and as many little drawings and hidden Easter eggs in every panel as they can. And it's obviously very fun for them.
Yeah. It's definitely worth taking a look at. It's a cool book. Fantagraphics always does a really good job with this stuff. They get great comics historians coming in, picking the material and sort of examining it in interesting ways. And, basically like you get these comics and then you get like two comics journals type articles about them that are pretty interesting. Yeah. So that's the sincerest form of parody and then all the other words that are in the title. All right, so we're saving a book that we're pretty excited about for last.
The best.
This is Shark Knife Volume 2, Stage 2nd, Shark Knife Double Z soft cover by Corey Lewis. The first Shark Knife came out
2006, 2008.
It wasn't 2008. It was a long time ago. Yeah,
at least 5 years ago.
At least 5 years ago. I think longer ago than that. But what is Shark Knife? Shark Knife is...
I can do it.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. So you've got a bad guy and you've got a good guy. The good guy runs a 5-story Chinese restaurant. And the restaurant has been cursed with ghost monsters by the bad guy in the walls so that at random times monsters will just pop out. And so Shark Knife is the kind of Shazam, Captain Marvel alter ego of one of the busboys, Caesar, who has to eat a fortune cookie to turn into Shark Knife.
Would that be Caesar Hallelujah?
It would be. Yeah, I couldn't remember his last name. I knew it was awesome. But yeah, Caesar Hallelujah eats a...
Do you remember Enta's last name?
Oh, it was like...
Enta
the dragon.
Yes. They are amazing. Every character has a great name like that. But yeah, so of course there's, you know, the cute daughter of the restaurant owner and stuff. But it's basically that every so often, which would be every day, a monster will pop out of the wall and he will have to transform and fight them.
And that's mostly what the first book is about.
Yeah, so that's the setup.
So the second book is more about it kind of starts with a recap of some of the stuff from the first volume. And then it gets into a story about how he became Shark Knife. And it ends up there was this other guy that was created at the same time named Orca Sword, who is kind of his arch nemesis.
Yeah, his antithesis.
What's that guy's name? Ravenga?
It's something like amazing.
Ravenga Orca Sword or something like that.
It's even cooler than that.
But so basically they become enemies because as a child, Ravenga is humiliated by Shark Knife or by Caesar when they have a fighting game contest. And he beats him up and then he decides that he's going to kill him.
Yeah. Yeah, basically the gist of this is there's this... this alternate universe that's like an arcade universe where these ancient space gods live and that are kind of animal based, and they've kind of picked representatives to use their power on Earth
or something.
And it's crazy. I don't even know how to go on.
Yeah, well, that's the thing with Corey Lewis's stuff. I mean, particularly the first volume of Shark Knife. It's all over the place, but it's definitely... a bit of style over substance, as Andy, who's sitting over there drawing, put it.
One has a lot more substance, and it's really funny, and there's some cool kind of character moments, and there's a lot of revelations and mysteries.
Yeah, I think the humor is really worth pointing out. It's like, I was I was cracking up through this whole book. There's laughing. So much funny stuff. Like, just the way the characters deal with each other.
Yeah.
Nobody acts like they're in this, like, world-shattering battle of the animal gods or whatever. You know, everybody's just, like kind of a stonery video game graffiti artist.
Yeah, there's lots of video game references and...
Yeah, I mean, even to the point where, like, when Shark Knife beats Orca Sword when they're kids, he,
not
like...
Not Orca Sword, it's, what's his name? Enter the Dragon.
Oh, yeah, Enter the Dragon. When he's, he uses, like, Akuma from Street Fighter's exact, like, code to finish him off and stuff. Yeah, I don't know. It's... The art's so energetic.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. You ready for my rebuttal?
A rebuttal against Shark Knife?
Counterpoint.
Sure, go for it.
The problem with this is Corey Lewis's art is so dynamically insane that this is a, like, the similar size to like Scott Pilgrim stuff. If you guys like Scott Pilgrim, you should check this book out. It feels like a little too small. Like, there's so much stuff going on so many of these pages, and he doesn't like have a nice square grid. These are like basically occasional panel lines showing that things are moving back and forth, and just things happen so quickly in this that I feel his art is amazing. His storytelling is not quite up to keeping up with the art. Like, things happen so quickly and so crazily sometimes that it's you're just along for the ride, which is awesome, but it's hard to get the story across sometimes.
It's definitely a lot better in this one than it was in the first one.
He's definitely evolved a lot, but...
I do feel his art style would benefit from color.
Yes, that was it. That was
like,
the other thing
I usually like, you know, I like black and white stuff, but I feel like his is so crazy that it needs the color
to bring the depth out of the art. Like, yeah, to bring out the important stuff. Again, he's just got so much stuff happening on every page and panel.
Yeah, the pages can be really busy. You definitely get the sense that it was he was kind of writing it as he went along.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like the story lends itself to that, and like his style lends itself to that. I mean, the pages are really, really busy.
Yeah, that's the word.
And but I think if you take a little bit of time with them, I think that it's like really rewarding, and there's like a lot of little stuff in there that's great. Yeah. I feel like especially sometimes though, kind of agreeing with what you're saying is, some of the hand lettered stuff can blend into the backgrounds a little bit just because it's so crazy and mixed in. But I just love the energy of it so much.
Yeah, I'm saying you're going along with it because you can't stop. But
it's a quick read and it's really funny and just there's like crazy action scenes and just so much fun.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed reading this more than anything else that came out this week.
Yeah,
I don't know, man. It's just great. I mean, it's just stuff I love.
Yeah,
I love video games. I love kung fu and like it's just it does those things in a way that's referential but isn't like. Kind of trying to tap into that like cool geeky thing. It's just like very obvious that Corey Lewis loves this stuff too.
Right.
It's very close in tone, I feel, to like King City.
Yeah. I mean, I would put this right next to King City.
That's the thing. I was comparing it to King City and Scott Pilgrim in my head a lot. It's like not influence, but like the same sort of stories of like a very vibrant alternate world and yet great story and very quick action and stuff.
Yeah, I'd say even closer to like Wonton Soup by James Stoka, which can sometimes be a bit of a mess of a comic, but is always incredible.
Right.
And has the same kind of level of like drug-induced insanity that I feel like this book has.
Yeah.
I feel like most people will compare it to Scott Pilgrim, but I feel like it's so different than Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah. Right.
It's not a story that takes the tropes of video games and manga and kind of applies them to relationships. It's just a story that celebrates the tropes of video games and manga in a completely over the top way that's really enjoyable. It's not trying to be anything more than what it is.
The best is the review by Warren Ellis on the back. He says the most powerful injection of pure comics you'll get this year.
Yeah, I think calling it just pure comics is kind of
does it a
good favor. I think it's great.
He switches his style up a lot. Like he does a kind of like, I don't know, we call it the cute little kid style,
like a chibi or SD style. Like
he does that for the flashback super when deformed. They're kids, super deformed, and it's amazing. So he definitely, like when he switches up his styles, you can see really that he can do whatever he wants. He's just trying different stuff. But there was definitely a page break right before they got back to the current chapter. And he said at the bottom, I think it was awesome content or death. thing. And I'm like, that's really what he's doing. He's just pushing to do the most awesome, fun stuff.
And there's a lot of, like, the humor in here is all really deadpan like that, too. There's a part where a guy gets killed and he's like, your fortune cookie says nothing because you're dead. And I don't know. I thought it was amazing. I think we all loved it, even if we had little problems with it. An awesome, awesome book.
There you go.
And a pretty good week. I feel like there was a lot of really cool stuff out this week.
Yeah,
so are we done?
I think so.
I think we're done. How long was this thing?
Too long. 3 hours?
An hour and 28 minutes.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, I mean, considering how much stuff we had to cover.
That's true.
All right, cool. Well, we're not going to be here next week because I'm going to be out of town.
Yep, taking a break.
I'm taking a break. I'm going to Austin, then Boston. Mm-hmm. So if you guys can think of any other cities that have the Austin in them, email them to me and I'm gonna go there. Maybe I'll go to Eric Costin's house and watch him skateboard. All right, so we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
Yes,
have a safe trip.
Later.